I appreciate you taking a few minutes. Absolutely. I know your schedule here is outrageous down here, trying to get to everybody. I know mine is.
Yeah.
I'm just going to probably cut stuff together, so feel free to ask any questions. But I think the big one from my side that I wanted to see is, one, congratulations.
Thank
number
you.
Three on the planet for your Ford store, Ed Bozard Ford. One of the things that a lot of technicians and leaders are struggling with is filling and keeping. And I think the filling part is a completely kind of separate entity than the keep. And I think, unfortunately, there's a lot more focus on the acquiring of people than there is in the keeping part. And considering you have a large shop as well as a full mobile entity moving, would you say that there is one specific thing that you're doing differently than most to keep?
There is. Let's talk about that in a different way for a moment, because the industry has kind of forced us to do the getting, because there's whether you want to call it a shortage or the growth, the demand, whatever it is, we need to go out and acquire new talent. And so we have forced ourselves to find ways to do that. And just imagine what would happen if we didn't lose the ones that we have and we gained at the same rate that we currently gain. You wouldn't necessarily have a shortage for very long.
No, sir.
And so it takes a little bit different approach. And I was having this conversation with someone yesterday morning, so I'm glad we're talking about it now. And I said, it is our job as leaders, and you got the Golden Ranch Award for being a mentorship, and I love that. And it is our job as leaders to learn our people and not only learn their aspirations and help them get there, but they don't necessarily always know what their strengths are. And if you're moving somebody around, you're doing something with them, or you're creating a different environment, and you're not looking at what their strengths are, you may be putting them in a role that they don't feel comfortable in. And rather than them telling you that they don't feel comfortable in, or that a person that they're working with or whatever, they go find a different job.
Mm-hmm.
And we connect with those people, and we have some intentionality of how we put things around them and do those things, then it just becomes a natural fit to where they start to really engage and take hold of ownership of being a part of the team rather than just being in the team.
Awesome.
And when you do that, it'll compound itself.
Awesome. Now, there is no way that you are talking to your entire group of technicians and your mobile technicians every month. There's just too many for you to do it yourself. So obviously you've put some things in place to help you acquire that kind of intimate knowledge. Do you have a process in place, like a written process for your leadership team to make sure that that's knowledge they're acquiring?
Well, it's always something that you got to nurture, because naturally you want things to happen. And it takes intentionality to go find those things and do that. Well, you're right. I do have a lot of people. I have 300 and I think I'm at 362 right now. And before you know, that's going to be 450. Mm-hmm. And I do touch bases with all of them as multiple times monthly, but still not enough to make all of those connections. But you can find there's moments or there's signs that let you know when you need to apply the brakes, when you're passing by and just doing a check-in and realize that this person needs a little bit more time, and what you can learn in those moments. But also you have to push that down to where others can do it as well, that are more intimately connected with them. And three times a week, I hold a leadership meeting with those people. And it's just a quick 30-minute deal. And 30 minutes may not sound quick, but when you're getting into those elements, I think that's a very quick meeting. And we do it for 30 minutes three times a week, and Mondays, Thursdays, Fridays. And it's identifying body language. It's all the elements that we need to continuously make sure that we're doing. It's picking up on tones. It's why are those things important? And then when you pick up on those things, when you talk about those things, you pick up on them easier. And when you pick up on them easier, now you're able to make that meaningful connection with someone when you're passing through to talk to them and build the roles around them. And I had the conversation with one of my people about moving a team around. And right now, there's one person on the team that has grown to the point to where they've put themselves in a position to do a different job now. But they are really the mentor mm-hmm. of the person that they work with. And that person, his strengths, really needs the other person for him to thrive. And without him, he's not going to. And we had some conversation about, do you think this person can run on his own? And he can't. He's very much a doer, and you have to build the right team around him. And if we take that intentionality, and nobody has to be exceptional at it, it's about trying to put forth that effort to do that. And when you put forth that effort, you get better at it. But when you put forth that effort, you're already doing more than anybody else is doing. Mm-hmm. And that's the key, is don't do what everybody else does. Be different. Be who you are and connect with your people.
And I think it's interesting because there's a lot of conversations about technicians especially. It's like they don't care about me. They don't know my name, or I feel like just a number, or those kinds of things. And when you, as someone who is got 362 people, and you understand that even from not necessarily a 30,000 foot view, which is usually the number everybody uses, but I would say it's more like a 3,000 foot view. You're close, but not quite close, but you know enough that you have, shall we say, three rungs down the ladder or so, maybe four rungs down the ladder, that there is somebody that is at a very specific point that needs to move up because they're no longer being challenged. So they need to move up, but the person that they are leading is not ready for them to leave. That becomes a very difficult challenge on how to work that from a people management perspective.
Right.
The fact that you know that and know who those people are and are working with their team lead to make that work for them as a grouping is awesome. That shows leadership that, not many have.
But leadership, and this is what I want to make sure the audience gets. We talk about there being natural born leaders. They're not any. It's a learned trait, and we can all learn to be leaders. And that's exactly what leading is. Leading is ongoing learners, and we don't have to have those traits, but we have to have the intentionality of learning those traits. And when you do that, it becomes more natural. Mm-hmm. And like Simon Sinek says, be the leader you wish you had.
Mm. And yes.
And when you do that, then people pick up on it. And they understand that you truly care about them. Because I can't hold the one guy back mm-hmm. because the other guy's not ready. Just got to make sure I put the right people in place. Because mm-hmm. if I hold one guy back, I could potentially lose him. Mm-hmm. If I put the other guy in a position where he can't thrive, then I potentially lose him. So. Mm-hmm.
And both aren't, sometimes the conversation revolves around, you know, you got to make sure you help and push and grow your valuable people. Well, they're all valuable. Like in this economy, you know, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $27,000 of cost to try and train a new person that's potentially been a technician for a long period of time. That's $27,000 in just lost equity in the business. So if you think about that, every time you make a leadership decision about, you know, how do we move someone through the business? How do we grow them? Each personalized growth path is important, and you can literally put a sticker price on it. And that's like, you lose that if you don't pay attention to that.
Yeah, right. And just think about that. That compounds itself because it's not just the training, it's the lost production. Mm-hmm. It's the time that you spend to go out and find that next person. Mm-hmm. It's all those things. When you start adding up, that number gets astounding.
Absolutely astounding. Now, in that regard, when you're, let's say on the other side of the coin, and this is usually not covered, but in that same aspect, you're looking at growth and moving people through paths. Do you have a 3-4-1-2 step process that you deal with the negative side of things? What if somebody screws up? What if somebody, you know, God forbid, lug nuts loose or things like that. How does you and your internal team deal with that kind of stuff? Because I would imagine that you have a very empathetic way of going forth it, and you have a written process. But the written processes I've seen in the past are usually write up, write up, terminate, and there isn't a list of things. So what's your process?
So there's different levels of that, and you have to stand for something or you stand for nothing, and that's mm-hmm. always cliche, but it's the truth. And so I do have some non-negotiables, and those non-negotiables are potentially immediate termination. Well, not potentially, they are immediate termination. And the reason why they are there is because we're in control of those things. And those, all of those non-negotiables are controllable. And it's usually affects safety. So like you mentioned, lug nuts off. Mm-hmm. That is one of them. If a wheel comes off in a customer's possession, you can't work for us. Mm-hmm. Because there is things that we have in place, and the focus needs to be there that you're paying attention to it. But potentially, if a wheel comes off, that vehicle could potentially crash. But also, as that wheel's bouncing down the road, it could hit somebody else or whatever. And so there's life and death that comes into play there. Mm-hmm. And so anytime it's that, it's a non-negotiable. And have I lost people because of it? Yes. It's very rare. But it still happens. And on the other side, we are human, and we are going to make mistakes. So if it's outside of those non-negotiables, and there's only three, but they all reflect safety. If it's outside of those non-negotiables, what tends to happen, and it consumes us, and no matter what position we are in the store or any business, really, is things happen, and then management tries to come through and clean it up. Mm-hmm. Got an upset customer, got to talk to the manager. Manager takes care of it and it goes on about the business. Well, there's something that caused that, whatever the situation may be. But let's say that we didn't do something or whatever that may be. As simple as an oil change sticker, not putting an oil change sticker on where someone that's used to getting them and not using the minder in the vehicle. Our customer's perception is we didn't do the job because they don't know any different. Even if you don't reset it, they don't know any different. So just to go get a sticker and put it on there and apologize is not enough. And so we want to involve the person that caused the issue in every one of those situations. Bobby, I need you to get me an oil change sticker, and then we're going to go out here together and take care of Mr. Smith's car for him. Because that lets them know that they still, just because they didn't do it then, that they don't have to not do it. They still have to do it. But also, in a lot of those cases, it's educational. Because if they do something that they think they did the right thing on, and it backs up on them, or backs up and you handle it and they don't even know that you handled it because they think they did the right thing, guess what they're going to do the next time? Mm-hmm. The same thing and cause you the same thing. And then we become very busy and not very effective. So when you involve them in it, sometimes it becomes very educational for them and it minimizes, it allows them to grow, but it minimizes the chance of that same issue arising again.
I appreciate that. And one of the kind of cool things in there that you said, you become very busy, not effective. And I think one of the things that technicians who have never been offside the bench in any capacity, who haven't been one-to-one with customers, don't understand the customer side of being busy and not effective. They can understand what busy, not effective is on the bench because you can be on the phone, you can be like hours on the phone with engineering, whatever the case may be. It happens. But the other side of things is, if you're dealing with 50 customers a day as an advisor for whatever reason, let's say between phone calls and inbound and SOP parts and all the things that the advisors have to do, just adding one sticker a day compounds how difficult the rest of the day becomes.
Exactly.
Because now you're not just involving the advisor. You've got the advisor, you've got an upset customer, you've got an advisor, you've got the lane manager in all likelihood. You're probably going to involve the service manager in all likelihood because usually somebody like that is going to be upset. It's like, I want to talk to the manager. Well, I am like, no, I want to talk to the manager. And it just, now you have 2, 3, 4, 5 people who are having a challenge because of a sticker or something simple like that, right?
Exactly.
So above and beyond that, I appreciate that very much. Being able to be, let me say it perhaps in a different way. Understanding that you have a process, you have something that is non-negotiables, that everybody in the store understands what those non-negotiables are, which means that when they make a mistake, they know they're going to have to correct the mistake. That is a kind... It's difficult to explain that to other leaders who aren't doing that.
They feel like I need that person still. But let's go back to that moment for a minute. Let's go back to how I stated that. If we have a will-off situation in the customer's possession, mm-hmm. that person can't work there anymore. Well, if that person would have test drove the vehicle or done anything, there's so many things in place for them to figure it out before it goes in the customer. If it comes off in their possession, mm-hmm. we call it, it didn't happen to the customer. And we're going to take care of it. There are some elements there. But if it comes off in the customer's perception, in the customer's possession, there's so many things that could have prevented that. Mm-hmm. So it isn't that I'm just, hey, you can't do that. It's, you can't do that and not catch it. Mm-hmm. Because that's the non-negotiable, that's the true non-negotiable. Because we're all going to make mistakes. But you got to, we got to be able to catch them. But when you create that environment, and you create the environment they want to be a part of, they understand that, like you said. Mm-hmm. And then let's circle around process there for a minute. If, and I tell people, and I'm going to do a revision at some point, I left a few chapters out of the book, and one of those chapters are, in the absence of process, it's just reaction.
And that's powerful.
And because if we don't have a way to do things, we have to react to how it should have been done. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times people think, well, I don't need to create a process for that. It's simple. Yes, you need to create a process for that because you can't determine how it went wrong. And if you're reacting to things all day long, it's usually because of the absence of processes.
Mm-hmm. Like Jocko says, discipline begets freedom.
Absolutely.
So when you have processes, you can live within the processes to dictate your day. And if you don't have a process, if you come across something that doesn't have a process, you add that into the new process. Make sure everybody is aware that this is now part of it. Maybe it's a subsection B, like this. If it has this, do this. If it doesn't, do this.
Exactly.
And it becomes a way to simplify complex things, because one of the challenges of being a technician is learning those processes, because there are so many to learn. And in order to be financially successful, knowing those off by heart is what compounds your paycheck.
Yeah.
So when you don't have process for things, you deviate from it, because you have to think about what happens next.
Exactly.
What do I do next? Not go to the internal tree that you've got to a point where you're memorizing and it's going da-da-da-da-da-da-da all the way through. Think time reduces paycheck, unless the think time is part of the paycheck, meaning diagnostics.
Exactly.
So it's interesting. Without process creates reaction. That's awesome.
Yes.
That's awesome.
In the absence of process creates reaction.
Nice.
And think about it from a time robber thing that you're talking about there. If the technician is not somewhat organized, and they don't have to be organized, processes can be moldable to the person. Mm-hmm. But if they don't put stuff back, and then now they need a 10-millimeter wrench, they have to go find that 10-millimeter wrench. And what are we doing? We're losing time. We're reacting to not putting it back. Mm-hmm. And so you got to be organized, and you got to have some structure. And when you put those things in place, in the absence of, they'll let you know, hey, we got an opportunity here. We can make this better. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have to have all the answers. Mm-hmm. They'll help you create them.
Awesome. Now, with that said, because I want to be respectful of your time, I wanted to ask you kind of what we always ask is, what would be your one piece of advice for technicians out there to be happier, healthier, more productive?
Don't wait for things to just happen to you. There's opportunities for all of us to do better. Sometimes we're very introverted as technicians. I was a technician. I was very introverted as a technician. I didn't want to talk to people. But I didn't. I wanted to be able, somebody gave me that opportunity, and I wanted to be able to give that opportunity back to others. And in order to do that, I had to learn how to overcome being very introverted. And so there's always things that we can work on personally. Mm-hmm. And when you work on those things personally, when you work on yourself personally, you find things that you thrive at. And because going through the motions of earning a paycheck, you may not thrive. You may have fun doing it if you're a gearhead, or you may just do it because you can make good money at it. Well, if you work on yourself personally, you find things that become your passion. And then when you can work off of your passions and build the role around you, and maybe it's you building that role, or maybe it's there's different elements that come of that. But if your leadership team or your management team will help you do that, it becomes a home for you rather than a job. if it's things that you can work on because you don't have that support, it doesn't mean that you can't make yourself better. Mm-hmm. And so always, always try to make yourself a better human. And we don't always know how to do that because we don't see our own faults. But ask questions. Mm-hmm. And ask questions. What can I do to get better? What can I do to be more valuable to the company? What can I do to be more valuable to this department? And if that answer is short-ended, like turn me as many hours as you can, maybe you're at the wrong place, or maybe you need to help that person see a bigger light as well. Mm-hmm. But if there's value there, then keep pushing that direction. Don't expect things to come to you. Put yourself in position for it to happen to you.
Mm-hmm. I like how you phrase that in both aspects. Is how can I help the business basically, how can I help the business be more successful? And you giving the examples, like if the answer is, you know, just turn more hours for me, I use the rule of, for those technicians that say those kinds of things in coaching, I use the rule of three for everything as much as I possibly can. Like if you borrow a tool, if you borrow it three times, buy it.
Exactly.
And I have a reason for the three there, but the same thing applies to those kinds of questions. If you're in a facility where you don't feel welcomed, or you don't feel like you're making enough hours, you don't feel like you're making enough money, ask the appropriate person professionally and respectfully. And that's a key thing that I work on in coaching. It's like, there are ways that you ask. There are things that you should do before you ask for those kinds of things. But ask three times. If by the third time you're still getting stonewalled, well, just turn me more hours or whatever the case may be, maybe it's definitely time to start looking. Don't start looking after one. Look at yourself. Try to build yourself better. Then go back, okay, what was I not doing? Maybe I didn't give enough light to them to either see my value, or maybe I'm not actually providing enough value.
Right.
And three times.
And then carry that further. If you do get to the point where you decide that, yes, I do need to do something different, now you have a different set of questions that you're going to ask your next prospective employer.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want to end up in the same spot again there. You mm-hmm. want to make sure you end up in the right spot.
Yeah, I think I've recently, I'm talking with folks like yourself, Ed, and many others over the last couple of years now, just kind of digging into all of this. As you formulate your own non-negotiables as a technician, get them written. That way, when you go somewhere new, whether life changes or you felt you needed to leave, whatever the case would be, you have those hard non-negotiables written so that when you go into those places and talk with those people, you can ask them about those non-negotiables. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that. So, Ed, thank you very much for your time.
Josh, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome.
Hopefully the audience finds this useful, and we can all grow from it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And folks, buy this man's book. I'll make sure I'll put a link down below. All right. You want to shout out?
So Mal One is a leadership book, but really what it is a personal help book. That's what leadership is how to become a better person. And each chapter, there's 14 chapters, is about a 7-minute read. I tell people, read a chapter. If you get something out of it, read the next one. If you don't get something out of the chapter you read, give it away. It's as simple as that.
That's the make them an offer they cannot refuse. You will absolutely get something out of each and every one of those 14 chapters.
Take 7 minutes of your life and invest it to make yourself better.
Don't take it. Invest it.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, Josh.